Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
We do sing, we sing the praises of Zorn.
Zorn, Wendy.
Would that be Eric Zorn?
Yeah, Eric Zorn, fine, fine columnist for your Chicago Tribune, sitting right over there.
I would not claim that that song was written about me, but it should have been.
It definitely should have been.
It was written about some other Zorn, but it's...
It applies more to you.
I've adopted it, and in fact, it's now identified with me.
It plays when you appear places. It plays magically.
It's like Hail to the Chief for a president.
Right.
I walk in.
Yeah, like you know why? Because he has it on his phone, and he starts it when he walks into a room.
Right. I have a boombox.
You know what it reminds me of? When Bob Hope would break in on The Tonight Show, and Johnny would be mid-sentence, and you'd hear, "Thanks for the memories" being played, and you'd see Johnny go, "Oh, great. Got to stop what I'm doing.
This cornball.
Bob Hope again. This will be fun."
Well, that's what that reminds me of.
Bill
rolling his eyes. Oh, God.
There's so many stories in the news we need to get your opinion on. Can we start out with the Gary McCarthy story, please?
Well, this is just something that I was listening to another radio station over the weekend, and there's a Bill Cameron. I know, I was slipped. I pushed the wrong button in the car. Gary McCarthy, who's running for mayor, former police superintendent, was being interviewed by Bill Cameron. I think you guys
know. He's good.
He's a great guy.
Yeah.
And they're just talking about various police issues, and the subject of the July 7th protest on the Dan Ryan comes up, and McCarthy says, well, you know, I really didn't like what happened there. The police being on the expressway were breaking the law, and if you remember what happened during that incident, or that protest, I should say, the demonstration, was that Father Flager and Superintendent Eddie Johnson, and I can't remember who else, but they all linked arms,
right,
sort of to show common cause, common purpose against violence. It was an anti-violence demonstration. And I thought it was kind of a cool moment. The mayor had endorsed the protest, and you see the police superintendent and Father Flager walking arm in arm down the expressway.
It was kind of cool.
It was a great moment. It was like a little choked up almost that the police, they could find common cause like that.
Tom Dart, was he there too? Sheriff Tom Dart? I don't remember.
The picture's online. I didn't study, but it was just this terrific
moment. Javi Baez.
So Javi was certainly
there. He was there.
Mago, yeah.
Yeah,
He was running way out ahead, so. So Superintendent McCarthy, our mayoral candidate, a former superintendent, he says that the police were breaking the law and that they should be prosecuted. Those police officers who participated in this march should be prosecuted.
That's interesting.
Interesting.
Were they breaking the law?
Well, yeah. I mean, technically, I guess they were. I mean, they were, in some sense, they were the law. They had coordinated with the state police and with the Chicago police, and everybody was sort of on board with this. They were going to allow this protest to unfold peacefully, and it did. It lasted, I don't know, about an hour, maybe, and they blocked off part of the Dan Ryan, and they detoured cars around it, and Governor Rauner had a little fit about it, if you remember.
Yes.
He called it chaos, which it was definitely not chaos. And I, you know, to my mind, Superintendent McCarthy, former Superintendent McCarthy, just stepped in it with this remark. I mean, it just shows kind of how tone deaf he is about the need for better relations within the community. And if you go and start prosecuting, arresting police officers for showing solidarity with a community like that on the technical grounds that they've walked onto the expressway in this demonstration, I mean, that's nuts. And he was comparing it to like dealing with drug dealers or shooting people or stealing. He made those comparisons.
Can I ask, because the election is coming, is he grandstanding to some extent? Is he trying to make a bigger deal out of what happened? Or
who is he appealing to by taking that
there's a law and order contingent that was really frosted about these protests. He also mentioned the protests on Lakeshore Drive, where they blocked Lakeshore Drive for a short while and walked over to Wrigley Field. That was a couple of weeks later, after the Dan Ryan protests.
Much smaller.
And there are people who are just enraged by those protests. I don't think there are very many people who are, because it only happened twice, and then they had someone where they were going to try to block the Kennedy on the way out to O'Hare, and the cops said, no, you're not going to do that. This was on Labor Day, right? Monday after? Yeah, it was on Labor Day.
I think it was Labor Day.
Labor Day weekend, for sure. I think it may have been Labor Day.
The Friday that preceded Labor Day?
It wasn't a weekday, and I remember, I'm pretty sure it was on Labor Day, but in any case, it didn't come off, and they stopped them, and I think they made some token arrests and so on.
Yeah.
I don't see, I mean, what this city is going to need is someone who can bring the police department and the communities that are most ravaged by violence together to fight violence. And you don't need someone who's going to say, okay, if you police officers cross over the line and assist in a protest in some way, then we're going to prosecute you. That was extremely tone deaf. I'm not sure that he had a huge chance anyway, but I think this is going to be a really tough
room to weather. There's so much to talk about with you. I want to move it along really quickly with the Van Dyke trial. Are you shocked that they only got one African-American juror on this jury?
I'm shocked. I'm troubled by that. I think that given that the county is 25% African-American, to have just one out of 12 jurors be black it sets the wrong message. I know, you know, we're all supposed to be, jurors are all supposed to be impartial, but they all bring their own experiences to a trial like this, their own feelings about their own experiences with police, their own experiences with, violence and so on. And to have only one African-American on the jury, I think, because I've predicted already, and I still think this is the case, that he's going to be acquitted on the at least the major charges, maybe some of the minor charges he'll be convicted
you
on.
You do think
I
that?
Do think that, yeah. And it's just because police officers tend to win these trials. They really do. All across the country, over and over again.
This is a very different case, though.
It is. It looks like it. Yeah, I was actually, right before I came over here, this radio station and WGN-TV and CLTV, other places, they're live streaming from the courtroom, which I don't believe has been done for a major trial in Chicago. This is the first really big trial that's been live streamed like this. And I was listening to the opening statements. And clearly the defense is trying to set up, they're trying to make Laquan McDonald look like he was wild and dangerous.
Yeah.
And they said, well, you know, he made eye contact with Van Dyke. And yet he was looking away and he was looking like he might attack him. And Jason Van Dyke feared that he was going to attack him. It doesn't make any sense when you look at the video, but they say that they've got another video that they've recreated from Van Dyke's point of view of what you see when you see McDonald.
So they say, believe our recreation, not the actual video.
Well, they'll say that you want to look at what Van Dyke, what his position was.
He wasn't the only officer on the scene, though. There were plenty of other cars.
Right. Well, and the prosecution made that statement, too. They said this guy, police had this guy basically under control. They had him corralled. They were following
him. Another officer was on foot.
Following him. Yes, exactly. And clearly, you know, he was a little out of control. But the question they're certainly going to try to, and they've already, you know, they showed their hand this morning. They're going to try to make it look like Van Dyke was an immediate danger to either Officer Van Dyke or to the community at large. He was going to attack, and this is what the defense attorney said, that he was about to attack. And I don't see it. I don't think the video shows it. But when you look at the statute on use of force, there's enough wiggle room in there that I think that what's going to happen probably, I could be wrong, is that the jurors are going to say, well, it's not first-degree murder. Because when you think of first-degree murder, you think of, like, the stalker, right?
Sure.
Right.
Something that's premeditated.
Hides in a closet. And the law does not say that about first-degree murder. Premeditation can happen in a second, actually. It's not, you know, clearly, Jason Van Dyke didn't set out that day to kill somebody, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he acted in the moment. You can be guilty of first-degree murder with a shooting or a killing that happens in the moment. They're going to try to make you think that the jury's think that he was following guidelines on use of force, that he had a knife.
Jason, right.
Laquan McDonald had a knife, and this was a threat. He had been like sort of wandering around slashing tires and so on, that he was out of control and he was going to be a danger and that they had to bring him down.
But getting back to the original question, if you're a black person living in this city, or let's make it even broader and say anywhere in the world, and you're looking at this case and you go, white cop shooting black kid
16
under 16 times under questionable circumstances, and then the jury only turns out to have one black person on it.
Why did the defense allow that to happen?
I don't know. I looked at the composition of the jury, the full composition. Another person on the jury that really kind of troubles me as a citizen is there's a woman on the jury whose lifelong dream is to become a Chicago police officer, and she's already apparently taken the entrance exams and she wants to go to the academy.
She shouldn't be qualified to do that.
I can't believe they let that woman on the jury, because she's going to, if she, let's say, it's going to be known ultimately who's on this jury.
Sure.
You can't keep it secret.
Right.
And the police officers are pretty strongly in favor of what Van Dyke did. So for her then to have to go into the academy, I mean, she'll know this. She'll know that if she is on a jury that finds him guilty, that she's then going to go to the academy, and people will identify her right away as being one on the jury. I can't believe they let her on the jury. That stuns me that they did that.
Julie Unruh interviewed Van Dyke's wife on the WGN News. You should watch it. I feel very sorry for her. She said when he came home, she said, were you just doing your job? Did you follow the law? Okay, then. You know, I feel so bad for her.
You know, I do too. But I mean, I feel bad for anyone in a situation like any sort of collateral damage, yes, in any of these crimes. But you got to remember that after this happened, all these cops sort of got together, or somehow all the reports that they wrote were lies. I mean, let's just be honest about it. They were saying that, like, he lunged at Van Dyke and he had to shoot him because he was attacking him and so on.
The video shows otherwise.
The video shows it's completely at odds with the video. So, and the idea that, well, okay, one person can get it wrong, but you can't get like six people to get it wrong.
Yeah.
They went into cover up mode, right? Yep. And there's a reason that they went into cover up mode, because they knew that something had really gone wrong.
Yeah.
This wasn't, I'm not saying why. I mean, it's probably really traumatic to shoot somebody no matter how justified you are. But I'm guessing that one of the reasons he was so traumatized by it was that it's not a clear-cut case. At best, it's not a clear-cut case.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But we'll see.
That's Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune. We'll take a quick break and then continue this discussion in just a little bit. Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune. We're talking about various stories from the news, and there are some big ones. We have not discussed the Kavanaugh story at all yet, Eric. What are your thoughts?
It's just an amazing morning for news around here.
Yeah, it is.
And, the Kavanaugh story, just last week it became public that when he was in high school, when he was 17, he allegedly pressed himself on a young woman at a party, and they were drunk, and she says, and she's now a clinical psychologist, I think, or maybe a professor of clinical psychology somewhere. I mean, they're both, how old is he? Like, he's 50s or?
Yeah, I think,
or late 40s, early 50s. That at this drunken party when they were 17, that he sexually assaulted her, and that she had been processing this for years. And in 2012, she says she brought it up at a therapy session. The therapist took notes, and she has those notes. So it's not like she's just inventing this out of whole cloth.
Mm-hmm. How did it get out?
Diane Feinstein?
Well, it actually, what happened, my understanding is that she contacted, like, her local representative, and she contacted Diane Feinstein and some other people even before Kavanaugh was formally nominated. When his name was in circulation, she let people know that this was something that happened. It bothered her.
Anonymously at that point.
It was anonymously until over the weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, the Washington Post did a long interview with her that ran Sunday. But before that, she was anonymous. And so the question, you know, and so Republicans were just issuing this kind of blanket denial. But now that she's come out, and she doesn't want to be the next Anita Hill. She says she doesn't want to participate in any kind of circus. But I think she's already kind of into that right now. Mm-hmm. Because and of course, Judge Kavanaugh has vehemently denied this. In her story, there's another guy in the room, another male. And he has also said he doesn't remember it. I think he has no memory of this. He denies that it happened as well, or doesn't can't say that it
happened.
But
aren't you leery of him saying it that way, that he doesn't have any memory of it, as opposed to this didn't happen?
I didn't read the quote from him. I'm not sure how he put it. I would be a little leery of that. Kavanaugh has categorically denied it. Said he never ever in his life has he ever done anything like that. Now, I don't know what to make of it, of these two conflicting stories. Hers seems fairly well corroborated by notes and by time. I guess she took a lie detector test, and those aren't legally admissible, but that's still something.
Yeah.
That she was willing to do that she saw that it was going to be a test of credibility, and she wanted to have that. The other question is, of course, he's 17, and now he's you know, this is 35 years later, something like that. And so the question is, well, how much do we hold that against him? And, you know, my sense is that you have a lot of people who believe that any crime that a 17-year-old commits could put them eligible for life in prison.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a very common, certainly conservative point of view, which is like, hey, 17-year-olds, they're adults. We'll try them as adults. Happens a lot in the court, in the legal system. So a little bit of turnabout, fair play here. You can't just say, oh, well, who didn't molest, you know, classmates when they were in high school, who didn't get blind drunk and do this. So it's going to be an interesting contest. And right now, I think Jeff Flake, a Republican senator who is on the Judiciary Committee, has basically put the brakes on the vote that was supposed to happen on Thursday.
Been stopped?
Well, I believe it has. I think he's certainly indicated that he wants it stopped. They want to do some investigation. The question is, now, are we going to have an Anita Hill, Clarence Thomas type scene. And if you remember that, you know, Anita Hill used to work with Clarence Thomas at EOC, were they, or wherever they were. And she had all kinds of allegations about his inappropriate behavior. And they both testified to this, you know, live national television. I mean, that may happen now. But
the difference is this time around, they're hinting at it may happen privately, that it wouldn't be a more public hearing. Do you know anything about that?
It might be. No, I don't. I think that it's going to be in line with her wishes, because she doesn't want that kind of circus, because Anita Hill's life was totally transformed by that. I don't think she wants that to happen here. I think, you know, ideally she just did not want him to get this seat. She thought that he was unqualified to be a Supreme Court justice.
Right.
I mean, not for political reasons, as far as I know. I have no idea what her politics are. But you have this possibility that they're going to have to really air this, and it's going to delay the confirmation. If Kavanaugh's nomination has to be withdrawn, they certainly can't act to get a new justice on the court before the election. And if the election happens to swing the Senate to the Democrats, and there's a sort of 1 in 3 chance, people say, about that.
But here's a quick question. Let's say the elections take place in November and it does swing toward the Democrats. Could the lame duck senators, the ones who have already been voted out, right? So they'll still work from November through December and into January, won't they?
Yes. And the answer is yes, they could. They could do that.
They could hurry something along in that period.
Some of them might have a little bit of shame about doing that, but probably not.
I don't think so.
I'm just kidding you.
I don't think so at all.
So they could, but it could be very politically problematic. Yeah. So it's going to be an interesting thing to watch. And boy, it's just this news is just
a lot of stuff going on.
Out all over.
Yes, there is.
So maybe nothing will be happening next week, and
we
can talk about baby aspirin. Right,
that'll be fun. Thanks, Eric. That's Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune. We'll find out what Steve has on the Wintrust Business Lunch.
And coming up, the stories that matter with Doma Tipongo from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio.